Yeah, just he needs to understand we're in this together, and I want him to. He has, you know, kind of the keys of the castle, and let's build this deal as a group and make sure that he's comfortable in everything we're doing. If he doesn't like something going on with the offense or the way I'm coaching it, hey, let's talk about it and let's come to the best answer. And I think when they have that type of ownership, it goes a long way.
I'd like to see that our talk about sprinkling it in occasionally.
it's really
paid off.
Incubus Barry White remix, is that what I'm hearing right now? Wasn't that Incubus coming back from break?
I thought it was. Was it Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Oh, yeah, you're right, it was. It was.
I put it online. How often should we play Barry White music under it? 49% of the people say every time. 27% say only once per segment, and 24% say never.
Is this one of those
49%
things?
Of the time, it works every time.
It doesn't make sense.
But I changed up the music a little.
Yeah.
Different Barry White song.
Didn't they use this for the Masters for a long time, too? The background music for the Masters?
Did they? Hello, friends.
That's not how they start the Masters, is it? Hello, friends.
That is how he starts it. Absolutely.
I never watched the start of the Masters, apparently.
He starts every NFL game that way, too.
I watch Red Zone and the Cardinals. He's never calling Cardinals games for some reason.
You know what? I never, ever really wanted to watch the Red Zone channel on a week-to-week basis until 2018.
Yeah, there were a lot of people in the press box that had it up on their laptops.
Funny how that works. That was Cliff Kingsbury with Doug and Wolf this morning as they wrapped up Newsmakers Week. Here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, talking about his relationship with Josh Rosen, which is still in its infancy, obviously. But the phrase that popped out from that soundbite to me, Luke, was he's got the keys to the castle. I like that.
And he's the king.
Yeah.
He didn't say that part, but it was implied right between the lines week. He should just go with that sort of like that thread all season. Like he actually is the king. Everything should be medieval with him. Wonder how long he could pull that off. We may have reached the limit already.
As long as we can pull off the Barry White background music. Look, that's going to be talked about a lot until we get to April and the Cardinals make it known what they plan on doing. A lot of time to break down all of the options that they have. And when you are the team with the number one overall pick, you do have options. I like the fact that they're being vague. Cliff Kingsbury joked about it this morning. That wouldn't be any fun if we just came out and poo-pooed on all these rumors now, would it? Let's let these guys have their clickbait. They have an option moving forward at quarterback. It is incumbent on Cliff Kingsbury. That's his biggest charge. The reason why he has this job was not only due to the failures of what we saw from the coaching staff in 2018, is because Josh Rosen is in place.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And if you want to be, and I've been critical, you can put Josh Rosen in the category of needs fixing.
Yeah, that's fine. I would
and they
say
believe,
developing instead of fixing.
Cliff Kingsbury is the guy that they are charging with that.
You say that they have options. They obviously have options as the team with the first pick. I mean, they could feasibly do whatever they wanted. But if the draft were tomorrow, I don't know that they have that many options. Because I don't know that unless Kyler Murray continues to shoot up draft boards, they really have any trade value with that top pick that's worth it. I mean, are you going to trade your shot at Nick Bosa for the fifth pick and a late third round pick next year? So I don't know. I mean, that's not worth it.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that somebody falls that in love with Nick Bosa.
I feel like if
right now it seems pretty unlikely that would happen.
It feels like if the draft was tomorrow, their option is draft Nick Bosa.
Yeah, but I think even though if the draft was tomorrow, and there's a lot that has to unfold between now and then, you have to go in, I think, if you're Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals, with the mindset of our top option, regardless of who it is, our top option, and you have to get somebody to play ball with you, is to trade that number one pick and cash in on other assets. Maybe pick up another first-round pick. Maybe pick up another mid-round pick. That, to me, makes the most sense.
Another first-round pick.
Whether it's Kyler Murray that people are in love with, whether it's Dwayne Haskins that people are in love with, whether it's Nick Bosa or Josh Allen that they're in love with.
The problem with Bosa in this kind of, I mean, aside from the fact that he's not a quarterback, so he already has a bit of a disadvantage in terms of having trade value, it sort of goes back to what I was saying yesterday. on the surface, you'd like to have a bunch of really good quarterbacks in this draft, a quarterback-heavy draft, and so that top pick would have more value. But really, because there's only one quarterback that could slide up to number one, it almost makes it more valuable if he actually does it. It's the opposite with Bosa. If you're a team that wants an impact player on defense and you're picking fourth, you'll still get an impact player on defense in this draft.
True.
I mean, there was a stretch where Todd McShay had, when he did, I think it was just a top 100 prospects. It wasn't necessarily his mock draft. The first 12 were all defensive players. A lot of these mock drafts, the first 10 guys have been defensive players. Until now, we're starting to see more and more quarterbacks sprinkled in.
Yeah. Other questions that are out there now that were addressed this morning with Doug and Wolf by Cliff Kingsbury. Can Josh Rosen run the air raid offense?
Yeah, I've always been, you know, fascinated with Josh, watching him play at UCLA. The talent he had, the arm talent is extraordinary. You know, it's as good as anybody you'll find. I thought he showed a lot of mental toughness going through a bunch of different coordinators, and continues to get up and continues to fight, and that goes a long way. And I think every time I've turned on the tape, there's something you watch that you like and can build with, and so that's exciting for me.
I like the other song more, though. This song is more like...
This is probably the signature Barry White song, though, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
What was the one he was playing?
This is the same one, just later in the song.
Okay.
This is Can't Get Enough of Your Love,
okay,
Babe.
Okay. This part is a little too like light and airy. And now we've already got a playoff spot locked up. Before, it was like getting down to business. Need to turn the season around.
Thoughts? I mean, of course he's going to say Josh Rosen can run the air raid offense.
Yeah. Not only is he going to say it, I would assume they believe it. Otherwise, why did Cliff Kingsbury get hired?
Yeah. But again, Cliff Kingsbury talked about the air raid offense in a broad picture. The question that was asked, do you have a mantra? Finally, I get the chance to prove this offense at the NFL level. I thought this was pretty interesting, too.
No, I don't. Like I said, our offense adapts to our personnel. And, you know, the air raid, that's kind of a name that stuck with anybody who worked with Mike Leach. And he's done a tremendous job everywhere he's been running it. And he's kind of the purist of the air raid. And I think everybody else is putting their spin on things and done different types of spinoffs of it, but it's going to be fun to see how this offense obviously works and adapts to the players we have on this roster.
I don't mean this as a bad thing. I don't think anybody on planet Earth right now, including Cliff Kingsbury, knows what this is going to look like at the NFL level.
Yes, I agree. He seems like he doesn't seem like he has a huge ego about this.
No.
It seems like... It almost seems like he wants to see how this plays out, too. It's like we're all in this together.
Well, I think they prefaced the question by playing the soundbite from Mike Leach when Doug and Wolf had Mike Leach on after the Kingsbury hire. And it's like, how is this going to look? And Mike Leach responded by saying, I'm kind of curious about that, too. And Mike Leach is, as Cliff Kingsbury said, a purist when it comes to this.
Yeah.
I don't think... We had the whole discussion, and Bickley was beating the drum for why isn't Mike Leach a candidate for head coaching jobs in the NFL? Which, you know, as I've done lately a lot with Bick, is dismissed it when it came out of his mouth, and then thought about it more.
Now that he's gone,
my.
But I don't, you know, even if he is the purist of the air raid offense, like the way he runs it, I don't think that necessarily would work.
Well,
100% of the NFL either. I think you need to adapt.
And I don't and this might be the answer to Bickley's question. I don't know that Mike Leach would be as willing to adapt at the NFL level. And that's just my opinion. But, you know, as you just said, and as Cliff Kingsbury said, like he's basically the inventor of this, Mike Leach. He's going to be the one that this has got him where he is. If he got an NFL head coaching job, he's going to put the air raid in the NFL. Whereas I don't think Kingsbury is nearly as resistant to adapting it to what NFL people tell him he needs to do. So maybe that is why he's getting the job over Mike Leach. Maybe it's because he's more willing to blend it into the NFL style of game.
Maybe, and his answer kind of indicated that. I think age is obviously a factor as well. Mike Leach is very much an individual.
Yeah.
He does things his way.
He does.
Doesn't necessarily lend itself the best to NFL situations.
No.
Just a bit of semi-breaking NFL news. According to Charles Robinson, Colin Kaepernick settled with the NFL on his lawsuit.
For $20 million?
he really owed $20 million to somebody, I guess.
Now he's free to join the Memphis Express for 3 years and $250,000. Appreciate that update, Jarrett. Going back to the Kingsbury conversation, which again lasted about a half an hour, one of the things that came up as well that shocked many people about what we saw from Josh Rosen, even with bad surroundings, not a lot of help around him, the lack of accuracy. That was one of the strong suits people pointed to as of Josh Rosen as a college prospect coming into the NFL, accurate passer. Here's Kingsbury on the accuracy issues that he saw on tape last year.
You know, I haven't been around him enough to see it. Mm-hmm. I like to make my judgments firsthand and through coaching and watching and evaluating. But like you pointed out, the toughness to continue to get up, continue to fight in some adverse situations, no question, down to the last game. You know, he's driving the team down at Seattle, has a chance to win it. That says a lot about his competitive nature and his spirit. And
I don't know if the music is funnier or Jarrett's reaction as he plays it or your reaction to Jarrett still playing it. You can't kill it before Bickley gets back.
We're trying to do a serious talk show here.
We are.
Kind of.
You have to, seriously, when Bickley gets back and you're doing that, you can't ever explain to him why. At least don't explain it right away.
No,
do it.
I think we take it to a step. We don't even acknowledge that the music is playing. Like, we can't even hear
that
it.
Must be in your headphones, Bick, because I don't hear Barry White every time Cliff Kingsbury gets played.
It must only be coming out of the left side of the, or which is your ear that can hear?
What?
Eh?
My right ear is my good one right now.
Okay.
Right now.
I don't even remember.
Hopefully by
any update on that? Any better at all?
The pressure in my head is subsiding.
Oh. That's good.
But I still can't hear very well.
Less pressure in your head is probably a good thing. I'm not a doctor.
Well, I was hoping that the hearing would come back with the alleviation of the pressure.
Oh.
So it's actually a little bit more stressful.
Okay.
Is this thing ever going to start working again?
Is this thing on? I don't remember what the Kingsbury quote even was now.
No, about the accuracy issues, and he mentioned the toughness. And I like the way Doug prefaced that question when he asked it, too, is there were perceptions about Josh Rosen coming into the season, coming out of college. Accurate passer, not very tough. Oh, and he's a load of problems to deal with personality-wise.
Yeah.
He proved the exact opposite on all three fronts in the rookie season. Wasn't very accurate, did take a beating, and didn't miss any time behind a depleted offensive line. And personality-wise, pretty intriguing guy who had a really good attitude throughout a rough rookie season.
Yeah. You know, it's weird when you think about it. Do you remember Sam Bradford, vaguely?
Yeah.
The perception of him was whatever you think of him in terms of being able to stay on the field or being able to be an actual good NFL quarterback, he's at least an accurate passer. And he wasn't accurate last year either.
No.
I mean, that was the one thing you felt like you knew with Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen, at least they're accurate.
No, if you asked analysts, fans, people who watch the NFL for a living, if you're certain about one thing concerning Sam Bradford going into this year with the Arizona Cardinals, what is it? They all would have said the same thing.
He's going to get injured.
If he can stay healthy, he's going to be good.
And that was based on him being an accurate passer. Not that he has a strong arm or that he's mobile or even that he's an amazing leader or anything. It was just that he's at least accurate. So maybe that's not fair, but I'm putting less stock in Josh Rosen also being inaccurate last year. Maybe it really was just the pieces around them.
I think a better receiving core could have improved that accuracy figure a lot, too.
Couldn't have heard it.
Yeah. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's Bickley and Murata, the podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Shift focus to baseball and the Arizona Diamondbacks. We had Mike Farron on earlier. I always enjoy talking to Mike. He's one of the baseball minds that I really respect because his depth of knowledge is ridiculous. I wanted to get into this with him, but we just ran short on time.
Do you love anything as much as Mike Farron loves baseball? That shines through. I assume it shines through on the air, but definitely when you talk to him. If you see Mike Farron like a D-backs game and you just pull him aside and just want to talk baseball, he will talk about any player on any team.
Well, the thing about Mike Farron, too, is like he doesn't really even follow other sports.
That's what I was just going to say. He loves baseball, and he only loves baseball.
Yeah.
Oh, let me think about that.
He's the type that would watch like a replay of a minor league game on the MLB Network during the Super Bowl.
Well, this year that wouldn't have been a bad idea.
Definitely would have been more scoring.
Yeah.
Between the Modesto Nuts and the
Chattanooga Nuts.
Yeah. In terms of pressure on individual players, and you're probably the wrong person to ask this question.
Oh, good.
You have pretty limited
Boring.
Expectations. Oh. Pretty limited expectations. Oh,
why is Jarrett still here? Does he have to be here for the
show?
Just
to play Barry White songs every 45 seconds. You have limited optimism on what you think the Diamondbacks can accomplish this year.
Yes.
But I pinpointed three players, and I wrote them down on my list, in terms of three very important players for this year's Diamondbacks team
that
are all coming off down seasons for one reason or another.
So should we play, is there more pressure on this individual or Vince's ear? Is that the game here? That's what we're playing?
That would have worked earlier in the week.
Oh,
not as much now.
Right.
Because I think there's more pressure on Robbie Ray than my left ear.
Yes.
I think there's more pressure on Steven Souza or Jake Lamb than my left ear.
There might still be more pressure on your left ear than Steven Souza. But Jake Lamb and Robbie Ray, I agree.
Well, I mean, you could phrase it differently and say, okay, if Jake, just focus on the position players. If Jake Lamb and Steven Souza increase their production to what they are capable of or what they've shown in the past, does that change your viewpoint on what the Diamondbacks can do? It's hard to do it because, I mean, Souza was non-existent last year.
Yeah, I forgot he was on the team.
And Jake Lamb missed half the season with an injury, and while he was out there, he wasn't very good either.
I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be terrible. I just think that they're going to be... like I think the over-under win total for them in Vegas is 77. I think that's about right. 77, 78 wins. That's not terrible. It's just not going to...
It's like where they were last year, pretty much.
Yeah, that's like four or five wins less than last year. It's not terrible, but it's out of the playoff race when September starts, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's very hard to make the argument that they're better going into this year than they were last year.
Yeah, the only way they'd be better is if Robbie Ray is just lights out.
All right, let me rephrase the question again.
Okay.
Do you find there to be, at least going into the season, more pressure on Jake Lamb or Steven Souza?
Jake Lamb.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because not only did he have the down year, but is likely going to be playing largely a different position this year. Oh, and by the way, trying to fill the shoes of Paul Goldschmidt while doing it.
Yeah, who he knows personally. So, I mean, that to me, that would almost make it more difficult.
Yeah, if Jake Lamb was coming from Kansas City this offseason and shifting to first base, it probably wouldn't be the same.
I mean, he was so non-existent last year, it feels like he's coming from Kansas City, but... You like with Lamb, you think to yourself, okay, he's going to strike out. He's not going to hit for average, but he'll get you at least 25 home runs. He had 6 last year. I know he missed a lot of games, but still. He hit 222 with 6 home runs last year.
And I think that was double what Steven Souza hit.
Yeah, they should. It's a good point. They should get enough additional production from those two guys that it's almost like they were just hurt all of last year. That's going to make up for, let's say, A.J. Pollock's production or whatever, and maybe part of Goldschmidt's production. But to Jarrett's point, I don't see how you can expect them to be better this year. You lost too much, and you didn't really add anything for this year.
True. All right, let's focus on the Robbie Ray question.
Okay.
Down year for him. He might have been, while healthy, the most frustrating Diamondback last year.
Yeah,
because of the inability to get deeper into games. And you figure as a pitcher who's as talented as Robbie Ray is, who's had the success that Robbie Ray has, the more experience you get, the more you figure out the whole how to pitch.
Yeah.
It's not just about throwing, but how to pitch and get through a game. So that was frustrating. And I pinned it on him starting pitching wise, because basically you know what you're going to get from Zach Greinke. You're going to get 200 innings. You're going to get 12 to 15 wins probably. He might miss a start here or there, but he's been durable during his career. You know what you're going to get. Robbie Ray is a crapshoot right now. And if 2017 Robbie Ray shows up, of the three players we focused on in this discussion, I think he has the ability to sway that win total more than any of the others.
I would say he has the ability to sway the win total more than anybody on the Diamondbacks, not just the three guys we're talking about. I would say more than anybody. I mean, if you think 2017, a 2.89 ERA, and remember he took a line drive off the head that season, and like July 28th, I think. He comes back a month later and is pitching fine. There was no hangup until last year. Last year he was, I don't want to say he was bad. He just wasn't good last year. And he finished with a sub 4 ERA. He wasn't bad. I can look at it. Yeah. 3.93. Not bad, but you were counting on him going into last year to be. There were people talking about him as the number two starter on the team with the potential to finish last year as the number one guy. And he just was, he was never right.
But also, if you look at the game logs, and I know pitching is evolving as a science, but only pitched 6 innings in 7 games last year. He was very responsible for putting a heavy workload and a heavy tax on that bullpen.
Yeah,
that needs to change.
True. He reached what he made. He threw a full 7 innings one time all of last year against the Cubs. That was it. He never went more than 7 innings, and he only went 7 innings once. So you're right. That's the sort of thing that doesn't show up in his stats, but it shows up in the team stats, especially in September when nobody in the bullpen can get an out. I think he's the guy that could sway this team. If you're telling me, hey, the Diamondbacks surprised some people, they won 87 games this year in 2019. It's because of Robbie Ray. And then Steven Souza.
I feel pretty similar to that.
I would say Souza would be the next one if he just goes off because they got literally nothing from him last year.
Well, the year before, he hit, what, 30 home runs for Tampa Bay? Wasn't he the Rays MVP in his last year in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, it's the Rays.
Didn't they win 92 games last year?
Yeah, they're in a real tough spot in that division.
You think?
Because you're never going to hear about them no matter what. They're going to have to win 100 games.
It's got to be fun going into battle every year with the Yankees and Red Sox.
Yeah. Well, we only got 162 of these games that mean nothing unless we win 100 of them.
Coming up next, there's a dumpster fire in the NBA, and no, we're not talking about Phoenix. It's east of there. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And Jared got a scam call from Lithuania earlier in the show. Just now, you're getting a scam call from Dublin, Ohio?
Dublin, Ohio.
It was labeled scam likely.
Yeah. I just have it labeled where anybody that calls me from Dublin, Ohio, they're known as scam likely in my phone.
It's possible that guy's not name is scam likely. Hello.
Scam is short for Scamford.
Scamford. Scamantha.
Luke Lipinski, scam likely here.
Scamantha.
Calling you from Dublin, Ohio.
I'll get to your call later, scam.
All right. The All-Star break has arrived in the NBA. And yes, people are talking about the festivities that will happen for the next 3 days in Charlotte, North Carolina. But they're also talking about this Anthony Davis situation. This is Charles Barkley, who sat down with Ben Golliver. This is off the air, but it was captured for social media. Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, talking about his thoughts on the Anthony Davis issue. Now, keep in mind, when Charles Barkley made these comments, last night hadn't happened yet.
This is a bad situation. It's a bad look for the NBA because that kid can't go out there and give 100% because he can't worry about getting hurt. The Pelicans ain't trying to win. And you see already, I mean, he's had less than 3 points twice in the last week. That's ridiculous. I mean, the guy's the second best player in the world. He's had 3 points in the last 2 games. That's not a good look for the NBA. It's not a good look for New Orleans. It's just bad.
Again, that's before last night happened. What happened last night is Anthony Davis left the game in the second quarter with an apparent shoulder injury. Not only didn't return to the game, didn't even stick around for the rest of the game, left with his agent Rich Paul before the end of the game. That led to these comments from head coach Alvin Gentry when asked about it afterward.
To tell you the truth, you know, this whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard, you know, for guys. You know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through. And to be able to come out and beat a team of that quality, I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job.
Yeah, I feel bad for Alvin Gentry and all of this, who remains popular in Phoenix for his time with the Suns. He was a well-liked head coach. He's a true,
probably shouldn't have been fired.
True basketball lifer.
Yeah.
So for him and his players to have to go through this is terrible. And I'll say this. I said it earlier. There's a report out now that Anthony Davis will play in the All-Star game. I don't think he should be allowed to. When this thing happened and Davis was not moved before the trade deadline, I did have that feeling of like, way to go, New Orleans. Way to stick by your guns.
Yeah.
It's backfired on them in the worst possible way. To now, I have to change my view and say, send him home. Pay him to go home. If you're a member of the, if you're Julius Randle or Drew Holiday, do you want to play with that guy?
No, but I still commend now former GM Dell Demps for not being, he was put in the position.
Yeah, that was one of the wrinkles today, too. He got fired.
Yeah, he got fired for doing the right thing, basically. He's put in the position where it's like LeBron wants Anthony Davis. LeBron's agent is now Anthony Davis's agent, too, and he's just going to force a trade. But it's not even just I want to be traded. It's I want to be traded, and I want it to be L.A. I want it specifically to be the Lakers. So whether you like the Lakers or you hate the Lakers is almost irrelevant to this conversation. It's you can't have players under contract demanding specifically that they get traded to a specific team. I don't even have a problem.
18 months before their contract expires.
I don't have a problem as much as a lot of people do of if a player is in a situation he just can't stand and he's like, you know what, trade me or I'm going to be a problem. I want to be traded.
I'm going to the salon.
Yes, I'm going to the salon. I don't have nearly as much of a problem with that as a lot of people do. But when you add the extra step of it has to be this team and I'm going to kill my trade value to any other team, I love that Dell Demps not only didn't trade him, but basically supposedly leaked all the potential Lakers offers to mess with their team too.
Look, Anthony Davis and his agency got fined. $50,000, I think it was.
Which he makes in less than a quarter.
$50,000 for a public trade demand. It's not even tantamount to a slap on the wrist.
No.
A trade request, you want to make it in private. You want to go talk man-to-man, face-to-face with your owner, your general manager, and say, I'm not very happy here. I think it would behoove you and me if I am somewhere else. But as soon as it becomes public, there needs to be bigger penalties for that.
As soon as it becomes public and you say it has to be this team, then it's one of those things where it's like, well, you can't prove it's tampering. Okay, but it is.
So here's the solution. They need to put a rule in the NBA. Everybody can only sign one-year deals.
The contracts are basically worthless at this point. The other way. You know, in the NFL, you get a contract, but the owner can just void it whenever, basically. In basketball, it's like, yeah, I'll sign this contract. I'll get the max deal from the team I'm on because that's where I can get the most money. But then in 2 years, I won out.
Do you remember when Carmelo Anthony and Darren Williams got traded? And it was they still had a year left on their contract. And it was unheard of that they were getting traded, you know, ahead of the time there and not expiring. Now it's like every year there's multiple superstars that do that.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. And it goes to this movement towards, and Bickley's been all over this as well, this movement towards more power for the players turns a lot of people off. Charles Barkley is one of the most famous basketball personalities on the planet, and he doesn't like what's happening. Here was more from his conversation with Ben Golliver.
I hear all these clowns on TV talking about it's great that all these players are exuding these powers. Let me tell you guys something. Workers ain't never going to have power over their ownership. Ever. Now, it might work for a couple guys here or there, but in the history of the world, no workers have ever overtaken the people who own a business. And when these guys are sitting home locked out in a couple of years, I want you to remember I told y'all that.
All right, Jarrett visibly cringed.
I'm not sure that that's true. I think there's been...
In the whole history of the world?
Yeah, worker strikes and... You know, revolutions and coups and stuff.
Well, revolutions and coups are different from worker strikes. I mean, name an example where a group of employees did go on strike and ended up with more power than the owners have.
The Major League Baseball Players Union? Until now?
They don't have more power than the owners. It's a powerful union, no doubt. They don't have more power than the owners.
This history lesson from Charles aside, I'm with him on this.
But I am too. And the fact that he's a former player saying this.
But see, I'm not
we're forgetting our places.
Yeah. I again, like I said earlier in the show, but I mean, I guess I'll repeat it. If you tell me players versus owners, the players want more power, I'm on the side of the players basically 100% of the time. They're the one providing the entertainment. They're the ones with the talent. But it's going to get to the point, and it might already be there in the NBA. It's getting dangerously close where I see it as we're getting to players versus fans because you're killing the product. And at that point, I'm going to take the side of the fans.
So how do they stop it?
Adam Silver's running two leagues. He's running the NFL and the NBA. He should know.
Guess what? They don't stop it. Rich Paul has elevated from nowhere to become the most powerful agent in sports.
He has more power than Adam Silver right now, it feels
LeBron
like.
James, I've gone on record several times recently to say he's the most powerful athlete of all time. And there's been some to suggest, well, he's getting up there in years. When he goes away, it's going to stop. He's just getting started. I don't know if you've seen the headlines in the last couple days about LeBron James saying, yeah, there's no doubt about it, I'm going to become an owner.
I hope he has to own a small market team and has to be on the other side of all this.
So he'll be able to combine this player power that he's been able to build over the last decade as the most powerful athlete ever, then go over the ownership side. You think there's collusion now?
Big market, small market does not matter. Well, it's where the stars are. Cleveland Cavaliers were a super team.
But I don't think stars are going to go to play for LeBron when he's the owner. I don't think he's going to have the pull
there. The exception in the Cleveland example is that he was drafted by Cleveland and is from there. Otherwise, he would have finagled his way out of Cleveland early on in his career.
See, I need to find this.
Never would have gone back.
That I found over the summer. So I might be a little bit off on this, but the theory, or the actual, like, the spirit of this is right. I believe since whenever Tim Duncan was drafted, is that like 97? So like the last 20, 21 years, the only players that have ever been drafted number one overall and then won a title with the team that drafted them number one overall were LeBron and Kyrie, both in Cleveland that one year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having the number one pick doesn't matter nearly as much as do you have a guy on your team that's buddies with another superstar somewhere else?
Hmm. Yeah.
The number one pick is so much less valuable now than it was 10 years ago. They have to be able to do something. Because it's gonna reach levels of ridiculousness, and we're kind of on the verge of it right now. I don't have a problem with LeBron having a ton of power. I don't have a problem with him being the most powerful athlete, as you said, in the history of, did you say, of the sport or the world or whatever.
He's the most powerful single athlete, in my mind, in the history of American sports.
I'm totally cool with that.
And that's, yes, considering Michael Jordan's existence on this planet.
But As a league, you have to have some sort of rules or guidelines in place. Even if he's the most powerful athlete in the history of American sports, he shouldn't be all powerful. That's not good. Nobody should.
No, absolute power is not good.
And that's where you're getting
that famous saying.
Yeah. It's like I've always said. It's like they wrote in the history books: absolute power, not good.
In those history books, did they ever have any examples of workers taking over owners' businesses? Because Charles Barkley believes that never happened.
Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Chick-fil-A off the 202 in Santan Village Parkway in Gilbert. You'll have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, plus Suns, Coyotes, and Innings Festival tickets. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Basketball Road Show Series. It's Bickley and Murata. Bick's on vacation. Luke Lipinski's been here all week, and he'll continue to be here for the rest of the show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, finally something good on the Cardinals. How about that?
Yeah, nice.
We played a lot of the Cliff Kingsbury sound. We won't do that here, because we feel like you've heard enough Barry White. Background music. Jeremy Bergman and Nick Shook of NFL.com did their 2018 NFL rookie report card, ranking each team's class 1 to 32. This is notable because there wasn't a whole lot of stuff to hang your hat on for the Arizona Cardinals in 2018.
No.
But this duo ranked the Cardinals' rookie class of 2018 10th best in the NFL, giving them a grade of B+. Their write-up includes mission accomplished in Arizona, kind of. Out of their 2018 draft class, the Cardinals got their quarterback, wide receiver, and center of the future. That's three starters in the first three rounds. They were one of just six teams with two rookies on the Pro Football Writers Association of America rookie team. Kirk is a punt returner, and free agent Zeke Turner as a special teamer. Cole played 100% of the team's offensive snaps, and Rosen, once installed as the starter, didn't miss a snap. That's not accurate. He got pulled in a couple games for Mike Glennon.
But I bet he didn't miss those games.
Didn't
like
miss
emotionally.
But he didn't play every snap either.
That's
All that being said, Steve Wilks' only draft class was not enough to save his hide, and the additions of Kirk, Sherfield, Cole, and Cunningham could patch up Arizona's decrepit depth at receiver and on the offensive line, the latter of which was one of the lowest graded lines by Pro Football Focus at full strength.
How much do you think this draft class saved Steve Keim's job? Like, do you think it played a role, or do you think they just didn't want to fire the coach and the GM in the same year?
I think there's some of that. I think the quality, I mean, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other. They got a lot of contributions from their rookie class. The only one of those rookies that was really counted on to do that in year one was Christian Kirk.
Yeah.
And while he was healthy, he made a contribution. We all said it. Best case scenario for the Cardinals was that Josh Rosen, because Sam Bradford, for his 1 year in Arizona, was so good, Josh Rosen just kind of sit back and soak things in. That was the perfect scenario. That didn't happen. Mason Cole got pressed into duty because A.Q. Shipley went down with a knee injury. That wasn't supposed to happen. He played pretty well for a rookie. So you can look at it one of two ways. It depends on how the light hits it is how you see it. But I think it probably was a factor, especially the presence of Josh Rosen in Steve Keim being brought back for this year.
Looking back, we really should have wished for something more realistic than Sam Bradford is so good that we don't even have to see Josh Rosen in 2019. Like, we should have wished for we each win Powerball every other week or something. Because when you say it now, I remember us all talking about it. It seems so absurd.
Well, the other thing that sounded absurd at the time was considering any end result with Sam Bradford that had him coming off the field not because of injury.
Yeah.
I begged you, Luke, begged you to trade me Sam Bradford before the season started in fantasy football,
yes,
and you refused.
Yeah, but there was a specific reason that had nothing to do with Sam Bradford for that.
Because you're an adult.
It. Yeah, there's a limit to how many quarterbacks you can have, and there was a whole thing. Trust me, I wanted to trade Sam Bradford for what you were offering, but I couldn't do
it. You admitted that you wanted Sam Bradford?
Yes, I was as wrong. You know that. I thought the Cardinals would win 10 games.
That's not quite as bad as Bickley defiantly starting Josh Rosen every week.
And Chase Edmonds.
And Chase Edmonds.
And I played him in like week 12, and I was looking like, what is going on here?
And then he would openly talk about how bad his fantasy football is. It's on you.
Yes.
This is 100%. If you could fire fantasy football owners, he would have been fired last year.
That's supposed to be like an all-star team in theory, and instead he had like the worst NFL team as his fantasy team.
Going back to this rookie ranking though, with them at 10 with a grade of B+, I counted 49 starts for rookies last year for the Cardinals. 13 for Josh Rosen, Christian Kirk with 7, 16 for Mason Cole. He was one of the few rookies to start every game last year around the league. Corey Cunningham, 7th-round pick, had 6 starts. Trent Sherfield started 2. Colby Gossett, 4. Zeke Turner, 1.
Yeah.
You can spin that very positively.
You can. And like I said, I'm sure Steve Keim did when they were discussing the future. Now, the other way to look at it, again, is that the rest of the roster was so either bad or injured that rookies had to play more than they probably should have, but it's, you're right. It's at least something positive when you look at what the Cardinals did last year. Because you remember how good the feeling was around that team coming out of the draft?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the goodwill or the good vibes around the Cardinals really didn't start to go away until like August.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just never came back. But the draft, that's got to be the most excited I remember Cardinals fans being after an NFL draft in, what, the last 5-10 years?
Well, I mean, it's a different feel when you get a quarterback in the first round. Obviously, you're going to get more attention. You're going to get more reaction from that pick, and that was certainly the case, especially for somebody as high-profile as Josh Rosen, who was pretty well-known,
yeah,
and has been talked about for years after his college career at UCLA, and the fact that you moved up to get him, that creates a buzz, too.
Like, yeah.
Not only were they aggressive in picking him, but they really wanted him so much that they were able to move up and not give up a ton to acquire that draft pick from Oakland.
And you got a wide receiver in the second round that's a local guy that everybody knew.
Yeah. On the heels of the last couple drafts before that, that's exactly what Steve Keim needed.
Yeah.
Now, it might be a different scenario next offseason if this rookie class doesn't show growth or show even what they showed as rookies.
Yeah.
But I don't expect that. I think they got good football players in that class.
But if you're picking number one overall now, like they are, I mean, in theory, the 2019 Cardinals draft should be better than 2018. You're picking the first round or the first pick of every round.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if it will be because you're not taking a quarterback. Probably.
You won't get the initial buzz that last year's draft class got.
They had the Colts number one on this
list. But again, do you want to be happy in April or do you want to be happy in September through December?
Well, yeah, and the Colts, they were not getting a ton of buzz when they took Quentin Nelson with their first-round pick.
Yes and no. It's not a sexy position to draft a guard at sixth overall.
Yeah.
But he was outstanding, and he was identified as such going in. But when you hit in your second-round pick with Darius Leonard, who's the defensive rookie of the year, you could have made a very strong case. And I know Baker Mayfield had a great rookie season, and Saquon Barkley was the offensive rookie of the year. You could have made a very strong case that Quentin Nelson was the most impactful rookie on either side of the ball last year. And if that was true, if that is true, you believe that, then they had the most impactful rookies on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, because Darius Leonard was definitely the best defensive rookie last year.
No surprise, the Colts were number one. Browns were also above the Cardinals, as were the Bears, Giants, Broncos, the Baltimore Ravens, Chargers, Jets, and Cowboys. And then the Cardinals come in at number 10.
How could the Jets be above anybody?
That's fair.
The rookie class.
Here's the problem, though.
13 starts out of Sam Darnold.
With a list like this, you can tell we're kind of stretching for something positive, and the Rams were 32nd on this list, and they were in the Super Bowl.
What a bunch of losers.
All right, coming up, we're at the All-Star break in the NBA. That means a respite for the Phoenix Suns. We'll look back at the first half of the season. We'll explore what we can possibly see in the last 23 games. Kellen Olson will join us from ArizonaSports.com next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.